you're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders and for coders about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beej, the optimistic newbie developer. Welcome to another episode of the Complete Developer Podcast. This week we have something a little bit special for you guys. If you recall from the mental health episode, we said that, Will said that I went full med student on the recording there, and we got three full episodes out of it. So this week, since it is a holiday week and a lot of us will be spending time with our families and possibly having a bit to drink, we're going to talk about substance abuse in the development community. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
Well, all kinds of stuff. I just rolled out a message queuing architecture for my side project over the weekend. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lines of code there. And that was... none of it was really all that difficult. It was just a lot of really deep thought, you know, trying to plan out, you know, architecture way out into the future and, you know, figuring out how we're going to deal with, you know, message queue messages fail, you know, what do we do? And, you know, how do we set policies about, you know, recovery and, you know, how do we deploy? And it just ties into everything. It's tangled through everything. So that was the main thing. And then on top of that, I'm fighting a pretty nasty sinus thing that I haven't been able to get rid of. I've had it for, I think, like a week and a couple of days at this point.
Well, it's a good thing that that we're playing an old episode then, huh?
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, like, last Monday when we were supposed to record and we didn't, you know, I'd come home and I was feeling a little bit off and got kind of dizzy and laid down on the couch and got really, really cold. And I thought, you know, I might ought to check. And I had spiked like 101.7 fever.
Remember you telling me that.
Yeah. And then it broke during the night. And the fever's gone, but I still have like all the drainage and all that stuff. So what are you into?
Well, it has definitely been an interesting week for me. As most of our listeners know, I had accepted a job up in New York, and Will and I are currently on Cisco's WebEx doing our recording for this intro. But I am no longer in New York. I am in Cleveland, Ohio right now, sitting in the guest room at my sister's house. Had a little bit of adventure. I got up to the company in New York, got checked into the hotel, went to my first day, and just kind of realized it really wasn't what I had thought it was going to be. And so I decided, you know, this really isn't for me. I'm just going to tell them I'm not interested and go home. Well, that was more easily said than done, because I went to the HR department and let them know, you know, hey, you know, I know we've got 2 weeks to kind of decide, but I'm pretty sure this just isn't the right fit for me. And, well, they informed me that they would not pay for my flight back home, even though they'd paid to fly me up there. And I didn't ask, but they also didn't say up front that they wouldn't pay for a flight home if I left in the first two weeks. Made some phone calls, called my sister, and she took the day off work on... so that was Thursday. She took the day off on Friday and drove down to New York City and picked me up in Manhattan. Major shout out.
Everything started going sideways. What was it, Thursday? Because I remember getting all the frantic texts from you trying to figure out, you know, how you were going to get back home and what to do. I didn't realize you'd taken the day off.
Well, that was after a lot of that stuff. I think I told you I was going to go over there. Originally, I was going to take a train, because there is a train that goes from New York all the way over here to Cleveland. But then she got back in touch with me and said that she went ahead and took the day off work and would just drive over and pick me up. So that worked out pretty well. since I've been here, I've gotten to spend a lot of time with my nephew. Those of y'all that follow me on social media already know that because I have posted a ton of pictures and videos. Actually, he was in here a little bit earlier when we were getting set up, and I got him to say, dude. Anyways, mostly I've been working on the project that you handed over to me. So designing a website, a WordPress website for a podcast, converting it from a blogging website to blogging and podcasting. And I've learned quite a bit about kind of the whole process. If you remember, you originally had suggested I make a wireframe and, you know, just get the experience of doing all that myself. And I found it easier just to go in and get a free Azure website and set up WordPress on there because I can go in and make it look exactly like it will look on the client's page.
Yep.
And so, which has been very helpful because I can set up a mock page and he's been able to go in, look at it, click through things, tell me what he likes, what he doesn't like, and it's been really helpful having that set up. Though last night I kind of shot myself in the foot. I decided I wanted to create a child theme for the one that I was using, and ended up crashing the whole website for a few hours till I went in FTP and deleted all the themes and went back in and was able to get it running again. That wasn't fun.
Huh. Yeah, that's why you have backups, man.
Oh, exactly. And I was so happy because I had just backed up right before I did that, knowing something like that would happen. So I still had everything. It wasn't hard once I got it, once I figured out what had caused it to crash and how to fix it. But I spent probably about an hour or two trying to figure that out.
Been there, done that. Did you get the actual WordPress white screen of doom?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Oh, yeah. Fun times. And now you see why I handed the project off to you.
Exactly. That's about all I've been doing. My sister is a teacher, and her principal's husband and I have been talking. He may have a job for a junior .NET developer up here. So there is a chance I might be able to get a job in Cleveland, Ohio. In which case, we will have to figure out how we're going to do our recordings over distance. But otherwise, I'll be back in Nashville. Well, we're driving back Wednesday morning. So,
yeah, well, I mean, you know, if we do the recordings by distance, it'll be, you know, the logistics will be a little bit more difficult. But the beer fridge will stay full a little bit longer, too. So I guess it's about that time.
It sure is. So let's roll that music and get into some IoTs. This week for IoTs, we're going to continue our talk on programming languages for IoT with a little talk about Java. Java is a programming language expressly designed for use in the distributed environment of the internet. It's written to be an object-oriented language that is incredibly portable, and there are very, very few hardware dependencies built into the compiler. It can be used to create complete applications that can run on a single computer or can be distributed among servers and clients in a network. It can also be used to build small application module or applets for use as part of a web page. Who hasn't had to update Java all the frickin' time? The difficulties with using Java in IoT come from making sure that your chosen platform supports Java. Some of the less powerful platforms are not as likely to have the Java support that you'll need, and to make sure that you have the hardware support libraries that are available, because they'll pretty much have all the control functions you'll need. Oracle, who publishes Java, has an Internet of Things platform that delivers an integrated, secure, and comprehensive platform for the entire Internet of Things architecture across all vertical markets. Some of the benefits of Java for IoT are real-time response capabilities for millions of device endpoints, faster time to market, full end-to-end security, integration with IT systems, a worldwide coordinated ecosystem for partners, and end-to-end compatibility and lifecycle solution management. I've got a couple of links to the information on here, and I will post that for you guys in the show notes.
So now we'll get to talking about our topic for this week, substance abuse. And most of the information we have comes from NCADD, NCADD.org, which is the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. And just like the other mental health episodes, we will start with a definition. And the definition of substance abuse is overindulgence in or dependence on an addictive substance. This is usually due to self-medicating for other issues.
There's a few early warning signs that come about. First of those is, you know, there's a number of physical and health warning signs that show up. Bloodshot eyes, pupils that have gotten smaller or larger than normal, depending on what they're taking. Frequent nosebleeds that tends to come about with snorted drugs like meth and cocaine. I actually worked with a guy that had fairly frequent nosebleeds, and it was from that. It wasn't meth, it was Peruvian marching powder. Another thing that comes about frequently is changes in appetite or sleep patterns. Sudden weight loss or weight gain, you know, these go hand in hand with the sleep issues and the changes in appetite. Seizures without a history of epilepsy or other
seizure disorders.
Deterioration in personal grooming or physical appearance. I've seen a couple of people that I've worked with that have been, you could tell that they were starting to become drug addicts because they started dressing a little bit more sloppily. Their facial hair grew out. They didn't clean up after themselves. When I make a comment about facial hair growing out, don't look at me like I'm a druggie.
I can't help it, dude.
It's been growing out for like 2 years. Come on.
Well, mine's already longer, and I've been doing it for less.
Yeah.
Well, now what I wanted to say with that was this is different from normal. If they are normally...
Yeah, if you're normally grubby like me, it's not a sign of addiction, you know? It's just, you're just shabby. It's all good.
Yeah.
So another thing that comes about as people become dependent on drugs is, you know, they get a lot of accidents and injuries, and they won't really talk about how they got hurt, especially alcohol abusers in the workplace. You know, there tend to be a lot of facial bruising where they've run into something. Apparently, their cabinets attack them once a week. Every Saturday night, their cabinets fly open and hit them in the face. I worked with three or four of those kind of people. And it's where they actually really, what was happening is they were getting drunk and they were wanting, you know, getting in somebody's face and getting the crap kicked out of them. You know, this sort of behavior kind of, you know, culminates in physical injury. A lot of times it'll come about, there's unusual smells on the, you know, the breath, the body, the clothing, or personal articles that they own. You tend to get a lot of this with people that smoke weed, smoke crack, you know, various other things. You'll smell alcohol on the breath big time. I've worked with two or three functional alcoholics that smell was always kind of around them.
Whatever you hear about DUIs with sucking on pennies or stuff like that to get out of a breathalyzer, it doesn't work because that's not how they detect the alcohol. What happens is when you've got the alcohol in your bloodstream,
it's byproducts from the alcohol.
Well, it's the breathalyzer. What happens is when your blood passes through the lungs, it takes in oxygen and it releases carbon dioxide and nitrogen and other things, including
alcohol. Vapors. And I think there's some of the biological byproducts in there too. They use that as a control because there was an issue with breathalyzer tests at one point because of things that were, you know, creating false positives like mouthwash and some of those kind of things. And so they use some of the things that indicate that you are actually metabolically engaged with the alcohol, I guess is the best way to put it. Another thing you'll see is shakes, tremors, incoherent or slurred speech, impaired or unstable coordination. I had a coworker at a previous job that frequently, you know, he would come in and there was always a faint whiff of alcohol around him, and we weren't quite sure whether it was cologne or something else. It was kind of it was an odd bird anyway, and we thought, well, maybe he makes his own, or, you know, we kind of wrote it off for a little while. And then we dealt with him a couple of times where he would come back from lunch and his speech was really, really slurred. And, you know, he worked from home and we had to call him, and his speech was extremely slurred there, and he was pretty much incoherent. And we got him on webcam, and he was clumsy on the webcam, and there's just a lot of stuff going on. And actually, this guy ended up, from a former employer, ended up getting terminated from the position as a result of that. And we found out about 4 or 5 months later that he had passed on from cirrhosis.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's
that's rough.
Yeah, these sort of things are kind of common, and if you've been in the industry long enough, you'll start seeing this, because a lot of developers, you know, they think, okay, well, it's a sedentary job, it's a desk job, I can come in drunk and sit there. Well, and you can, because you're sitting there, but you're also not effective. You know, you're very disruptive to your coworkers, even if you don't realize that you are. Those are the physical and health warning signs. Now, there's some other stuff that comes up as well. You have behavioral signs of drug abuse. There tends to be a drop in attendance. Obviously, if you're getting drunk, stoned, whatever, you know, on work nights, you're going to have a hard time coming in the morning. Another thing that will come up is loss of interest in extracurricular activities, hobbies, sports, exercise. You know, really, as we discussed before, these things sound very similar to depression. They kind of dovetail along with it a lot of times.
Well, that's because a lot of people
have both.
No, a lot of people have both. A lot of people are.
They're not fixing one with the other.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't realize it, but they are self-medicating for depression with alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, either depression or OCD or something along those lines. Eventually, you get complaints from coworkers, supervisors, teachers, or classmates. You know, bear in mind that when you come into work, you're working with other people and you're affecting those other people. So eventually, they complain when your problems start hurting them. Another thing, and I've actually seen this with coworkers, is an unusual or unexplained need for money or financial problems, borrowing from other people in the office, stealing. You've
seen that in the workplace?
Oh, yeah, where people, you know, somebody had money on their desk and it disappears. And, you know, a lot of times coworkers, you know, especially if you're in a secured area, somebody steals a dollar off your desk, do you really want to raise that up the ladder to HR? Okay, you lost a dollar, but how much time are you going to lose trying to track that dollar down? And so people let that slide, but word gets around. Things go missing. You know, a lot of places, you know, too, don't have camera systems, right? So they don't really have a way of telling exactly what happened. So you'll see that a lot in the workplace. You'll see sudden changes in relationships, friends, favorite hangouts, hobbies. It's weird, like addicts tend to quickly shift friends, because I think a lot of times the friends either know something's wrong or something majorly offensive has happened, and they just, you know, it's like they're breaking up with people. They're like middle school.
A lot of it also has to do with as people start to get closer to them, they will start to see patterns that will lead them to believe the person is an addict. And so the addict will bounce around. You see this also in certain personality disorders.
Another thing that will frequently happen is that they get into trouble. They get into arguments, fights, accidents, illegal activities. You know, they're arguing with coworkers. I worked with a guy who was using steroids, right, illegally. And it was known in the office, you know, among the people there, even though it was a drug-free workplace, which I never could quite understand why this was okay. But whatever, you don't rock the boat, right? And this guy was so enraged at, you know, like, everybody was walking on eggshells around him. Of course, the running joke was everybody was walking on eggshells because he ate hard-boiled eggs all day, too. it was something with the protein with his steroids, and, you know, he was super-duper muscled up. You know, he would fly off the handle. I mean, I saw him snap a laptop. So now get into some of the psychological things, right? Another thing that you'll see as people transition in, you know, from just using to being addicted. There'll be unexplained changes in personality or attitude. It's not just breaking laptops. You know, sometimes it's, you know, they either withdraw socially or they get really loud and boisterous when they haven't been before. I've seen guys that were complete, total nerds. You're like, okay, you know, I get along with them great, but they're not the kind of people that you bring to a cocktail party because they talk to everybody. Right. And then all of a sudden they're jumping all over the place. because they're on something.
Well, I usually like to invite those types of people to parties because it makes them more interesting.
But again, it's a sudden change in behavior, right? I mean, that's one thing that you see. Another thing you'll see is sudden mood changes. Irritability, we already discussed that, right? You know, angry outbursts. Mm-hmm. Same guy, roid rage boy, right? And I mean, he's since gotten better. I think, honestly, whoever was dosing him might have just kind of tipped the needle a little bit above what he needed. There was somebody ringing a bell down the hall, right? This guy flips out and starts screaming at the top of his lungs over a cube farm. Says there's either a, what did he say? There's either a mentally disabled person, you know, he used the other word for that, or a Shriner down the hall, and they need to effing stop. It's right in the middle of the day, somebody had rung one of those little hand bells like the Shriners have at, yeah, you know, Christmas, and he was just, he completely twisted off over that. And everybody else in the office put on headphones. You know, and he had a big, nice pair of those Coase headphones, like the big ones that go over your ears and make the side of your head look like Princess Leia. He had those. He had the, like the noise cancelers. And it's like, put the headphones. Well, it's because he had biochemical changes going on that were messing him up. Another thing that you'll see is periods of unusual hyperactivity or agitation. This is another thing I've seen people that start out and they start drinking a lot of caffeine, they start building up. And really, you know, there's a lot of, if we want to talk about addictions, caffeine in this industry, holy crap.
Well, caffeine's an addiction in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Now, I do have a question for you because I haven't seen it, but how is nicotine? Do we have a lot of smokers?
It's not as bad as it used to be.
Let's say, because it's difficult to be a smoker nowadays, especially in an office environment.
It is. And, you know, there was a brief period, well, I say brief. It was brief for my career, right? Because I started, you know, in 03, really, full time, where smokers really were kind of better off because they took breaks,
yeah,
constantly. And, you know, I would take smoke breaks, and I didn't smoke, but I would stand down there with the smokers because what are you going to do? You know, are you going to jump on me when these, yeah, guys are out here four times a week and I'm out here once a week? But now, you know, nicotine use in the office is sharply on the decline. And, you know, they've gotten to the point now where it's very hard on smokers. So you're not going to see as much of that, and it's declining. There's other psychological warning signs. There's, you know, lack of motivation and ability to focus. You'll notice that a lot of them dovetail very nicely with symptoms of depression. That's because they happen concurrent with depression. Or in many cases, people are on downers of some sort. So they're basically exhibiting the same symptoms because they're down from where they should be. Another thing that you'll see sometimes with some different meds, and you don't see this as much, is, you know, they're withdrawn, they're anxious, they're fearful, they're paranoid. You'll see a lot of, you know, panicky type behavior. I've seen this with cocaine addicts. Like, believe it or not, I've worked with quite a few addicts.
Oh, no,
at various points.
I could really see cocaine being a very popular
it is, drug. Right? The amount of caffeine and nicotine it used to be that people consumed, right? They get to a certain point and the caffeine doesn't do anything for them. They need a boost. And so what do? They go to something harder. And they're not going to, you know, weed isn't going to help them. So they're going to get something.
It's a psychedelic anyways.
Right.
One of the biggest sections here is early warning signs. Not only to look for in your own behavior, but you can detect it with friends, loved ones, even coworkers. And
well, you're honestly, think about it, you're around your coworkers more than you're around your family. You know, I mean, we've got a mutual friend that works with me, sits right behind me in the office right now, right? And he doesn't do drugs or anything. Like, I'm not trying to bring that up, but
I could not ever see
that. I couldn't actually picture him doing drugs. So
that would be scary.
I can't even think about how that would work. But the thing about that is, well, I spend, what, 8.5, 9, sometimes 10 hours a day with him? When was the last time I spent 10 hours in a day with my wife, you know, without interruptions? Well, it's like, you don't. You spend more time with your coworkers than you do with your family most of the time because you got to.
Which is why having good coworkers is very important, which means being a good coworker is very important.
Wow. Dropping the knowledge, are we?
Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, as a coworker, you're in the best position, right, to see this stuff coming. If you're a manager, you're not really in as good of a position as a teammate. And so you'll see somebody start to break, and you start to see these sort of behaviors start to come out, these sort of changes. And a lot of times, you know, some of these things can actually precede the drug use.
Yeah, that's, like I said, that's why these are early warning signs, is a lot of times you can catch it early enough on to where it may not become a lifelong problem.
Well, like, okay, so we're talking about tolerance. Somebody does drugs more, they do drink more alcohol, your tolerance builds up. There's an old saying, the saying is the man takes a drink, the drink takes a drink, then the drink takes the man. And so the idea is that over time, your body develops the ability to function with a certain level of chemicals in your system. There's biological feedback mechanisms, basically, so that you can continue to function when you're kind of out of range on something.
Stuff. And also, if you do talk to any addicts, one thing that they will say that's a big issue with a lot of them. I mean, I worked in addictions with them and talked to them every day as they were going through the process of recovery. And almost all of them that were serious about their recovery said that what led them to full-blown addiction was trying to repeat that experience from their early days of using.
Yeah, I've seen that with recreational drug users. And then you have the depressive types of people that have, they have either anxiety or depression, and they're trying to not relive something.
Well, yeah, there is that too. That's the other side of it.
So that's part of the dynamic that drives people in, more towards increased levels of drug use to the point where it starts really doing, significant damage. The next thing is withdrawal. If you drop off of most drugs, alcohol included, actually, alcohol is extremely dangerous. Compared to a lot of things that are illegal, alcohol is immensely destructive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it can withdrawal from alcohol, from a true alcoholic who uses, we're talking someone who drinks a fifth of vodka a day or something.
Yeah.
Stopping, especially cold turkey, can lead to seizures and death even.
Yeah.
This is why where I worked at the psychiatric hospital, we took people off of alcohol in a process with medication and monitoring.
And you have to do something fairly similar. I mean, everybody knows the story of, everybody knows somebody that quit smoking and how tremendously unpleasant they were then.
I'll tell you what's ironic. And this always fascinated me when I was working. Alcohol and benzos, or anti-anxiety medication, really, muscle relaxers too, those are the dangerous things to come off of. Like, you really...
Heart rate gets too high.
Yeah, you could die from withdrawal from those. But the thing that was the least dangerous, but probably the most painful to come off of, was the opiates. Heroin. Like, junkies that shoot up, they're going to go through more pain and suffering coming off of it, but it is less dangerous to stop using that.
So, and this kind of goes into the whole thing of, the next thing that tends to show up as a sign or a symptom, right, is loss of control. Typically, when you're around addicts and you're seeing how they're using, they take a drink and they go, okay, this is my last drink. But, four drinks later, this is my last drink, I promise.
Does that mean I'm addicted to talking? Because I usually tell people, all right, well, I need to get going, and then 4 hours later, I actually leave.
Yeah, well, no. But you'll see this progression, right? As they lose the ability, as they're using, to put the brakes on their own use. Over time, they get a desire to stop. They can't.
I'll say, this doesn't always happen that they desire to stop. This is more of a, if they get the desire to stop but can't.
Right.
If they express regret, this reminds me, there's a quick diagnostic tool that they teach us in medical school that it doesn't mean that you have a substance abuse or a dependency, but it is a early warning sign, ruled in type thing, so that if you do answer yes to one of these, further testing is needed kind of thing. And it's called CAGE. It starts off with the C for cut down, and you ask, have you ever thought that you ought to cut down on your drinking or drug use? Or has anyone told you should cut down? The next one is annoyed, so CA. Annoyed, have people annoyed you by criticizing your drinking or drug use? Then you have guilty. Have you ever felt bad or guilty about your drinking or drug use, or woken up and felt guilty morning after using? And then the last one is Have you ever had a drink or used drugs first thing in the morning to steady your nerves or to get rid of a hangover? These are just four quick questions that primary care physicians can ask that will direct them to further questioning.
So another thing that comes down here is addicts tend to neglect other activities, especially things that used to be important to them. Spending time with family, hobbies, time with friends. They tend to spend that time getting high. It tends to gradually eat more and more of their life. So over time, it takes up greater time, energy, and focus. And they spend a lot more time, using drugs, thinking about using drugs, trying to figure out how they're going to get their drugs. They start, dropping their interests. And it pretty much just goes through their entire system psychologically. Eventually, negative consequences come calling. They spend their rent money on drugs, or, hey, they can't keep their kid in daycare because they spent that money on drugs. At that point, if they continue use, it's a fair bet that they're addicted because they can't stop, even with horrible negative consequences. They're physically, mentally, and psychologically unable to get away from it. What kind of things can you expect from an addict workplace, right? We've talked about a lot of negative consequences. Job performance really suffers. There's inconsistent work quality, at least early on, right? As they start kind of spiking in use, their work quality will go to crap, right after they've been using, or if they're using at work. When they're not a consistent addict, their work going to pot is not necessarily consistent either, right? So it gets written off by management. It kind of gets allowed to slide for a while.
Well, one thing that happens, especially with a lot of kind of functional addicts, is they'll have those times where they do come in, drunk or high or whatever, and that does affect them, or when they come in hungover, but that's not all the time. Whereas they may be using all the time, but they're good enough with it to not come into work like that. Yeah. Except on rare occasions.
And I've seen several that were just absolutely brilliant people. And the thing is they had an intelligence greater than the norm to such a degree that they could let it slide some. And they were actually still more productive than the other people there for a while until it started catching up with them. And then they crashed hard because they still had, everybody knew they were smarter and they had higher expectations on them and they crash and burn. Another thing you'll see is, obviously poor concentration, lack of focus, lower productivity, really weird, work patterns. You can't ever tell if they're, going to get anything done or not. They'll be absent a lot. They'll be spaced out at their desk, non-focused, not getting work done. They'll disappear from the job site. I worked with a guy that was a cocaine addict, and he owned the company, and he would come in the morning, and he was tired. He was like the rest of us. And then he would disappear for about 15 minutes, 15, 20 minutes every morning before the morning meeting. There, we really couldn't figure out where he was going. And we finally discovered, oh, hey, he's going to the bathroom. And, and I found a razor blade in there one morning and, didn't even put the pieces together. I never did find the mirror, so I'm kind of concerned about where he was making his lines. But that's kind of gross anyway. But when he would come out, he was all hyper and just, ready to go and, rubbing his nose all the time. And he was a coke fiend. And so you'll see those kind of disappearances, especially when people are actually using at work. The other thing you'll see is, there's a lot of workplace behavioral issues. So they'll be having financial problems. And so they get, sometimes they're asking for raises when they don't really merit it. They're trying to find ways to get money out of the system, get money out of other people, really start getting some serious hustle. They start avoiding colleagues.
Yeah, they want to avoid the people that are close to them because they're the ones that are going to recognize that there's a problem.
Yeah. Whereas, if you're working with some developer, right, and he's kind of a dirty neckbeard and, he's losing his edge and you can tell he's not focused and he's bumbling a whole lot, social interactions. Well, the guy and that he once wasn't that way. Some dude from another department that just met him has no idea. He thinks, well, they're all like that.
Yeah.
And so he can hide among people he doesn't know a whole lot easier than he can hide among people he does know.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you'll see, and I've seen this in a couple places, is actually those people are dealing drugs to other employees, which is absolutely crazy. if for any number of reasons, you know, now you're exposing yourself to getting caught, you're going to lose your job, you're going to get arrested, you're going to have, like, you know, basically everything's going to go wrong all at once when it does go. But, you know, they're at the point now where they're scrambling, they're trying to get money. And selling drugs seems like a good way because, hey, they like their drugs and they've got a supply line. So they're doing that. Another thing they'll do is they'll steal other people's prescription medications, too, if they have them in their desk and they know. Another thing you'll see is, you know, obviously deterioration in appearance and hygiene. It's not so much, you know, obviously like growing hair, growing beard. That tends to not be as big of a deal, but fingernails. When their, you know, fingernails start getting really long, especially that pinky. When you see that long pinky nail, that really only means one thing, guys. or they'll just be dirty. You know, they're not taking care of themselves. Their breath is bad. Their skin has this pallor to it. You'll start to see a lot of that sort of behavior with particular drugs. Not all of them, though. You know, some of them too. I've seen it where it will wind somebody up that was anal retentive a little bit before, and now they're like this super neat freak.
So, some of the things that you can do for yourself, or that you can help with other employees, coworkers, friends, family. One of the big things is EAP. It's the Employee Assistance Program. It's required for all places that have a certain number of employees to offer this, and it's confidential. No one will know. Even your boss won't know that you're going, unless, of course, they make you go. That's a different, completely different situation. But the areas that it covers are personal issues, job stress, relationship, elder care, child care, parenting issues, harassment, substance abuse, and grieving, helping to balance work and life, financial and legal issues, and family violence. There's a couple of different types of referrals. The first one is the one that I talked about where your boss, no one at your work even knows, and the EAP has to be outside of your work. So if you work at a hospital or something like that, it has to be separate from that. That first one is a self-referral, and that's where the employee, or you seek it out on your own. And then the other two are ones where your boss refers you. Or the first one is an informal referral. That's where a supervisor, possibly a friend or coworker, recommends EAP. Same with the self-referral. Now, the last one, this is a formal referral, and it's based on job performance, and your supervisor recommends this, and this does go in your employee file.
Right. Well, they have to, I mean, at that point, it's, you know, something that's happened on the job site. You know, somebody's gotten hurt, you showed up drunk, you know, there's things that now start to be a legal risk to the employer, and so they're filing this, and it's going in your employee file in case they have to can you later, because they need to have their ducks in a row.
A lot of times what will happen is if you don't self-refer and they see it coming, they will make an informal referral, one that won't go on any permanent record or anything like that. And that's your chance to act there. If you are the person that's being told, hey, I think you really need to go to the employee assistance program to talk to somebody about what's going on with you, that's your chance to step up and show, hey, I want to get better. I want to take care of this. And usually what they'll do is they will give you at least one chance. Most of the time they'll give you a couple of chances unless something happens before you get that formal referral.
Yeah, and a lot of times, if the thing that happens is bad enough, that whole process gets skipped as well.
That's true. I mean, it does depend on the situation.
Well, how long
working there, and you know how trustworthy you are. If they know what else is going on with you, there's a lot of variables that.
Well, I mean, there's a big difference from you've been working at the company for 10, 15 years, and you know not had any serious problems until recently, and
you know it's because your wife died, and you know your dog got run over, and you're. You just had three or four good hits in a row. And,
yeah. You know, basically, versus, life is like a country song.
Versus, you know, you just started there 6 weeks ago and you've been drunk for five of them. you know, that one, you probably aren't going to get any slack.
No.
But there's a huge range of how this stuff works out, but there are programs in place to help you. Now, a lot of job sites, if you're working at a smaller company, there's not really an employee assistance program. At that point, you have to start looking into some other things. There's a lot of 12-step programs. I know they get a lot of flack for any number of reasons. You know, there's Narcotics Anonymous, there's Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's, you know, there's always some sort of option that's actually a, you know, somewhat of a treatment plan. There's also treatment centers.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes if it's bad enough that.
Especially if you need help with detoxing, with the early parts of it. There's several different types of treatment centers. Where I worked at was a short-term detox. So most people stayed there about a week, sometimes 2 weeks. Yep. And we were just to get you off of whatever you were on. What we've been talking about is if you have a problem, well, what do you do if... What options are available if someone you know and care about has a problem? Well, there is a group called Al-Anon, but it's specifically for families of addicts. And
families and close friends.
Yeah, both. Families and close friends. And you don't even have to be associated with a person that's in their associated AA or NA group. You can just go and get support. These people are very good and very helpful. That kind of covers things that you can do early on for yourself and for others, as well as what to do when you feel like you have a problem or if you know someone that has a problem. There's a lot more out there. If you want further reading, check out our show notes. If you do feel like you have a problem, seek help.
And we'll have those resources there in the show notes to kind of get you started in the right direction. So this isn't necessarily about just if you're an addict, be able to fix it. It's being in a situation where, hey, if you see somebody else as an addict, you can actually help them instead of just sitting there helpless.
Yeah, I agree. That was very well said. And with that, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, this week I have another text editing tool that I think a number of the listeners will actually like. This is Markdown Pad, Markdown Pad 2, version 2 is out now. And if you're familiar with Markdown, it's a language that you can basically transpile into HTML, but it's a lot simpler to work with, so you don't have to worry about not closing tags and those sorts of things. It's a limited subset of HTML, although they've pushed it in pretty good ways. So Markdown Pad, out of the box, the free version will actually, you know, let you edit regular Markdowns. Which is cool enough. But if you buy the paid version, you can actually edit GitHub-flavored Markdown. So you can include code in C#, Python, Perl, Ruby, this huge litany of languages. And what it will actually do is format it like that language and color code it so that it looks decent.
So how much is the full version, though?
Well, I'm glad you ask. It is $14.95 US.
Like one time only? Is that like a monthly fee?
It's one time only.
That's not expensive at all.
No, I already own it.
That's like what a CD used to cost.
Yeah. So it's really a pretty slick tool, and especially if you're doing GitHub repositories and you have like a readme.md,
yeah.
That's a Markdown file that GitHub renders for you. So you could build that file on your desktop and push it up to GitHub, and you've got that README. But you get a preview locally without all that pushing it up there and then seeing how it's screwed up and then fixing it and then pushing it again.
Yeah, I just usually write it in GitHub.
Well, you can do that as well. And there's other, you know, there's other places that you can use this as well.
Yeah, yeah. But, just...
No, I mean, it's handy. I didn't realize you could do that directly in GitHub. You used to not be able to do that.
Yeah, you can.
It used to be you pushed it up to a separate branch.
The readme.md?
If I recall correctly, yeah.
Well, when I did the tutorial, it had you editing it in GitHub. Like, you can edit it, anything in GitHub.
You could edit it, but did you get a preview right there by it?
I don't remember now.
Because this puts the Markdown code side by side with the preview of it.
Live. Oh, that's... That's nice.
Right, so you can edit it there, and then you can put it up on GitHub. And so you're not clicking around as much, and you can just work on the thing you're working on instead of trying to see what you did.
I see what you're saying. That is...
That's a lot of pain removed.
When we stop recording, I'm going to be downloading that. That is awesome.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised you don't already have it, actually.
Yeah, I am too. I had not heard of
it. Got every other piece of software on your system.
I don't know Markdown.
It's easy. And actually, I'll give you another resource, and I think I may have... I can't always remember if I've mentioned something before or not. If you go to daringfireball.org, they have Markdown tutorials.
Yeah, you've sent me that link before.
Yeah. So if you want to learn how to use Markdown, you know, for using it with this editor, that's a great place to go.
I'll definitely check that out.
And this is available on markdownpad.com. Pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is OMFG Hello by Argo Fox and is also licensed under Creative Commons and available on SoundCloud. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at www.completedeveloperpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @CompleteDevPod. And like our page on Facebook to keep up with news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.